the media constructs prisoners as these like violent, gang-ridden, criminal men. And I have to say that the more I go inside and meet people, the more that is so far from the truth. Seeing this historical hunger strike has really amplified that other narrative to me in the way that people are working collectively across racial groups and ways that people are constructed to work against each other inside prison.
I remember getting a letter from a guy he sent a survey back and he said, you know, I sit here in this windowless tomb. He said, but I'm okay. I've been here 37 years. And I just broke down crying, you know, because I can't imagine someone being in a 6 by 10 room out for a half an hour, if they're lucky, a day, and being there for 37 years. And I was just wondering, what could he have possibly done, you know, for them to keep him in there for 37 years?
The strike started July 1st. And people were committed to striking indefinitely until the demands were reached. After a period of time, it was amazing. Over 6,600 people were hunger striking in the state of California over 13 prisons.
As caring people on the outside, there really needs to be a loud noise being made to make sure that these guys get heard.
Tonight on Circle A Radio, we'll bring you an update on the historic California prison hunger strike. Stay tuned. We begin the show tonight listening to a video made by the Prisoner Hunger Strike Solidarity Coalition. It's called Support the Pelican Bay Hunger Strike, and it's on YouTube. Prisoners in the Security Housing Unit, SHU or SHU, at California's Pelican Bay State Prison went on hunger strike on July 1st to protest the cruel, inhumane, and torturous conditions of their imprisonment. The hunger strike has been organized by prisoners in an inspiring show of unity across prison-manufactured racial and geographical lines. This is Robin Redderford of the Legal Services for Prisoners with Children.
I remember getting a letter from a guy he sent a survey back and he said, you know, I sit here in this windowless tomb. He said, but I'm okay. I've been here 37 years. And I just broke down crying, you know, because I can't imagine someone being in a 6 by 10 room out for a half an hour, if they're lucky, a day, and being there for 37 years. And I was just wondering, what could he have possibly done, you know, for them to keep him in there for 37 years?
This is Hamidis Cooks of Legal Services for Prisoners with Children and All of Us or None.
The Pelican Bay Hunger Strike is about resisting torture and intimidation by the prison administration in California. I believe it relates to the history of prison resistance as people get tired and frustrated and needing to coordinate and come together to stop inhumane conditions.
The hunger strike is about, I won't even say conditions of confinement, I'll say the torture that the men in the segregated and secured housing units are going through in Pelican Bay and in Corcoran and other prisons.
This is Manuel LaFontaine of All of Us or None.
These people are doing this at a death. They're desperate. They want to be able to be treated as human beings. But you cannot be treated as a human being inside a prison.
This is Bo Brown from the Prison Activist Resource Center.
In order to make more money or whatever it is they're doing. Now, food is an issue. In some of these prisons in California, they're feeding people less than 1,000 calories a day. The medical care is horrendous.
This is Jerry Elster from All of Us or None.
These isolation units are isolation units within the isolation unit.
Prisoners to get out of the SHU that are quote unquote gang related, which could mean you talked to someone who was perceived as a gang member or you had a tattoo they thought was gang related. One thing they tell them is to get out of the SHU, that they need to debrief, which means they need to go and tell the CDC, our staff, everything they know or can think about or whatever about whoever else is in there in order to get to the main yard themselves.
I mean, I think that first of all, you have to look at the history of prison and the overall public view, which usually is provided to them by the media about prisoners, the sentiment about prisoners, almost like, you know, prisons being a garbage bin in society.
You can go all the way back in California, specifically to the 70s, and the whole case around George Jackson and all that stuff started in Soledad is around torture, specifically aimed at the black prisoners, because the black prisoners were becoming politicized. A month after George Jackson was murdered came Attica, which was a very well-organized strike. After that, there were many, many, many what were classified as riots in American prisons. Lots, more than we'll ever know about. Because prisoners saw that as a way to change their conditions.
What the hunger strike becomes is a tool, a last tool, a last resort when you go through the administration through petitions and you're ignored, when you go through the criminal justice system and are ignored.
Some of the men said they're prepared to die this time, you know, because they feel like they're being killed slowly anyway, so.
They chose the only weapon that they can use at their disposal, and that's at themselves.
At some point, prisoners say no more. So I believe this Pelican Bay hunger strike is a testament to no more torture.
You have to think about, when is enough enough?
You heard the brothers from Georgia unite all races, crossing religious and political lines to come together in Georgia to scream about these same atrocities that's taking place in Pelican Bay, Lucasville, where these prisoners was on prisoners in Lucasville was on death row, or on death row, and all it was asking was to be treated like human beings and have some of the just basic amenities.
What the people can do to help these people is raise the voice. Where is amplifying the voice? And where is amplifying the fact that they're saying help?
It's about exposure. It's about exposure. It's about media. It's about to get people to talk about it. It's just like any issue.
Sign on to the demands. Sign on to the petitions. Use Facebook. Use Twitter. Use whatever you have at your disposal, whatever tools you have to help amplify the voice.
Family members, they need to write letters, make phone calls to their legislators. They need to participate in rallies or protests. They need to call the warden or prison officials and constantly ask about their loved ones. And they just need to be involved.
We have to agitate. We have to be able to be organized. So we have to come together. I would like for us society to start looking at alternatives to incarceration in prisons.
We need a movement that can be united and respectful of each other and the people that it's supposed to be supporting. And we can't do that if we don't practice.
And as people continue to protest and say no more and fight and ask for assistance on the outside, then more people will know that the conditions that people live under inside is not acceptable.
The five core demands of the Pelican Bay hunger strike. Number one, end use of group punishment and administrative abuse. Number two, abolish the debriefing policy and modify gang status criteria. Number three, comply with the U.S. Commission on Safety and Abuse in America's Prisons 2006 recommendations regarding an end to long-term solitary confinement. Number four, provide adequate and nutritious food. Number five, expand and provide constructive programming and privileges for indefinite SHU status prisoners.
You are listening to Circle A Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. Next up is Betty, whose husband is currently in the security housing unit of the Pelican Bay State Prison in Crescent City, California.
Regular prison is pretty much what you see on TV, with a lot of drama and craziness taken out, but not. You hear people complaining about how prisoners get treated so well. Well, those are like level one and level two prisoners. You take it up to level four, and then you've got people that are being treated like continuous threats all the time, so they're threatened. You get around a dog and you get nervous and afraid, that dog becomes nervous and afraid. Well, imagine a whole room full of men with all that nervous and afraid energy. So it starts to escalate, but still they have a lot of the freedom. Level one, level two yard, they can use a phone all the time. They can shower whenever they want. There's a lot of freedom. They can go in and out of their cells. They can hang out in the yard. There can be hundreds of men out in the yard congregating, and there's jobs. They can work. They can make money to put on their books if they don't have anyone out on the outside. They can earn merits. The SHU has none of that. The SHU is you sit in your box. If someone loves you enough to send you a TV, then you don't have to go completely stir crazy in a blank empty room. Books are hard to come by. Mail is acceptable, but again, if you don't have somebody sending you postage and paper, you get a very minimal amount. If you don't have anybody, you really don't have anybody in the SHU. They're limited to only having about $40 of canteen per month when someone sends them money, because they have no way of earning it. They have to be escorted down aisles to go to shower and yard. They're not even allowed to really talk to each other, or they'll be accused of the infringements that put black marks on the record. Like, if a black guy and a black guy talk to each other, then, oh, that's gang-related activity crap. You know what I mean? No. They can hardly even speak to one another without being accused of these things when they are walking down the tier. They have about an hour to an hour and a half, maybe two, three times a week in the yard. So that 22 and a half hours a day has been reduced to less, not every day in the yard. And it's a small area by themselves where they can get a little fresh air, but not much to look at since it's all concrete covered. The food is lower quality and very, you know, just barely enough to keep a man alive. I heard about undercooked beans, undercooked rice. They never get citrus or fruits like that. Very, very bland soy, and they don't have any way of turning up the heat or turning off the main lights, or the light situation might be the same in regular prison. And no windows, so, you know, no basketballs, no checkerboards. They're limited to what they can have. It's told they can't even get a real pen. They can only get the fillers in the middle, and then they have to, like, structure a pen handle out of paper. A lot of the things that we all take for granted, they're not even allowed. Sewing kits to patch their clothes. No music players. They can listen to the radio that's plugged in. And visiting, of course, visiting on the main line, you can sit with your loved one, you can hold hands, you can talk, you can whisper, you can touch one another, and in the SHU, you can sit on either side of a big piece of plexiglass and talk through a phone. But you get a whole hour of monitored privacy. So those are pretty much the big differences.
I'm Sam McEwen Page. I live in Arcata, California, and work with a local grassroots group there called Bar None. And for the last 5 years, I've been working with people inside Pelican Bay and women's prisons in Chowchilla. Justice Now, an organization in the Bay Area in Oakland, and California Prison Focus. And California Prison Focus is kind of housed and been a big part of the hunger strike that has been going on in the state. They have been a big part of the work that I've done conducting the legal visits inside Pelican Bay. Pelican Bay State Prison is the security housing units or the first build in the country, and since then many have been modeled after them. It's called the worst of the worst, which is really obnoxious, and it's kind of the end of the line in the California prison system. It's like once you go there, there's nowhere else to go. It's the worst conditions. It's horrendous place. People are locked in tiny cells and don't get to touch anybody, and there's no natural light, and the fluorescents are on at 24 hours a day, and people are really tortured, you know, spiritually, psychologically, mentally, physically. there's the short corridor that's like the men who've been in there for 30 plus years. When the first security housing unit was built, they took the worst of the worst, as they call it, I say in quotes, from each of the prisons, and they put them in that short corridor, and those men have been there since 1989. And so talking about the historic hunger strike, how it began about a year ago, there was this collective inside the short corridor of the Pelican Bay State Prison, and 11 key members have been organizing, and they call themselves the Short Corridor Collective. And they've kind of been the ones who've put together the letters and have been organizing with people across prison walls and have worked strategically with the actual mediators and legal representatives. The collective contacted these groups on the outside and asked people to put together a coalition about who would be an outside source, outside rallying support, organizing. People inside are incredible. Like, they have so done their research. Going back to the Short Corridor Collective, there's 11 of them. They've come from all of the different races and all of the different identities. They came together and did their research for years. They read about historical hunger strikes internationally, locally, over the past several hundred years. And this wasn't just born out of a bubble. It was strategically planned and placed, and I believe it to be seized in a political moment that made a lot of sense in the fact that the federal receiver has come into California, gone over the California CDCR and California Department of Corrections, and I like to say rehabilitation in quotes. They added that the last few years, and that clearly isn't happening. Federal receiver said that the situation in California with overcrowding is cruel and unusual. Health conditions and living conditions are outrageous, and that they have to let people go. And so just the fact that that has been happening, the situation in the news has become such a political moment that they seized this was really well put together. And said that the situation in California with overcrowding is cruel and unusual. Health conditions and living conditions are outrageous, and that they have to let people go. And so just the fact that that has been happening, the situation in the news has become such a political moment that they seized this was really well put together. So when the prisoners contacted all of these groups, they asked them to start a coalition, and that coalition has been amazing. Prisoner Hunger Strike Solidarity Coalition. I have never seen such highly productive, incredible people come together. It's been really inspiring. I feel very honored to be around these people. And what I've seen most in this organizing is the amount of dedication to shifting the center and focusing on the voices of the prisoners and not taking that voice. And there's been different ways that people have done that, like really focusing on shifting the interviews to family members and people who are working with people directly inside, and being very specific and articulate about the words of the prisoners and not our words or how we would frame them. I'm here talking about what I know and to amplify the voices of inside, but I do not mean at all to be the voice. I don't believe in giving voice or finding ears. I like to, you know, work horizontally with people across prison walls, and that's a really hard thing to do. It's very dangerous for people inside with retaliation. When the administration knows that people inside are working with people who are sympathetic to their needs, the threat of retaliation is that much higher. I think it's really important to talk about how I'm not an authority. I don't mean to give voice to people inside. I'm hoping that I am doing a good job sticking to the demands, and people have been very specific in the coalition about sticking to the demands. The media constructs prisoners as these like violent, gang-ridden, criminal men, and I have to say that the more I go inside and meet people, the more that is so far from the truth. And seeing this historical hunger strike has really amplified that other narrative to me in the way that people are working collectively across racial groups and ways that people are constructed to work against each other inside prison. One of the list of demands is to abolish the debriefing process because it creates false and highly dubious evidence. If somebody debrief or snitch or however you want to call it, and they go into a special unit and are often removed from Pelican Bay, their family is then in danger because of the information that's given. This process is just a very dangerous place to put people inside. So the debriefing is a big issue. It's gone haywire. So another list of demands is to eliminate group punishment, and it's very racialized. Historically, the prison system and the state, the construction of our whole society has really used racial groups. It pitted racial groups against each other to help mediate and control the population. And the prison system wouldn't work if there wasn't a gang system in place for them to utilize and pit against each other. And since my time of going inside Pelican Bay, I've met a lot of people who tell me stories and want me to find a lawyer because someone that they know was deliberately put into a cell with one other person who is the opposing gang, and one person killed each other. And that's part of the group punishment, but it also happens in many other ways with retaliation and such. So there's two, the debriefing, eliminating group punishment. The strikers demanded that the CDCR is in compliance with the U.S. Commission on Safety and Abuse in the Prisons, which stated in 2006 that to end long-term solitary confinement. But the fact is, some inmates have been in the SHU for over 30 years. The fourth demand is adequate food. Unsanitary and inadequate amounts of food are given out, and currently there's no accountability or in-depth quality food. That sounds really minimal, but people aren't given enough calories to exist. People are really thin. People who have health issues don't have any sort of accommodation. I've met so many men who pull up their sleeves and they just, you know, they have candida, or they are diabetic, or they have an allergy, and they're not given the right foods to accommodate their health. Also, people complain that not only is the food inadequate, small amounts, not specific to people's dietary needs, but it's cold and they don't wash the trays that they put it on, and it's unsanitary, and you get food from last week and they mix it together with the hard pieces on the trays. It's disgusting and really insulting. The fifth demand is to expand and provide constructive programs to people who are in the SHU on indefinite sentences, meaning that they are not going to get out. That would include self-help treatments, educational routes, religious routes, productive activities. They also asked for constructive programs and privileges, and their privileges are one phone call a week. People inside the SHUs don't have access to the telephone calls, and what we would call toque. The CDCR calls them winter caps, but it's really important to the prisoners that they're called watch caps, because when the CDCR calls them winter caps, then they're only allowed to have them through certain months. But the cells are made out of concrete and they're really cold and there's no natural light or sunlight. People really suffer from frigid environments, and then they aren't allowed to have warm things. So they ask for watch caps and sweatsuits. So there's the five demands. The strike started July 1st, and people were committed to striking indefinitely until the demands were reached. After a period of time, it was amazing. Over 6,600 people were hunger striking in the state of California over 13 prisons. People were striking for all different reasons. All different reasons being their conditions. They were in support with Pelican Bay. They are protesting their right to protest. I mean, this is like a nonviolent way. These people have no other route. I mean, the system is so broken. The route of grievance is ridiculous. The route to complain about their situation and things that happen to them starts with a thing called a 602, and it goes to Sacramento, and then it's denied. There's a whole route of things after that that you can do. It takes about a year. Very few lawyers would pick up a case before someone exhausts that entire system, and it's a ridiculous system. So just thinking about how much time people have and how you don't have an idea of when day or night maybe is happening because there's no natural light, and you're waiting through this ridiculous process that you know is a joke, and it's over a year before you even know you're going to get any help from the outside, and that's even something accessible to people is really frustrating. So this month during the historical hunger strike has been interesting. I don't think that people really had a full grasp on the level of commitment and the long haul that was going to be required in this strike, and finding hooks to get the media to catch on and report about the strike was a huge challenge. And one of the Eureka reporters in Humboldt said that they would report it once someone died. And that is an unfortunate reality to the way the media works. So the process of starvation is a disturbing process. If you've ever read about it, you know, there's different levels that your body starts to shut down. And a lot of family members were coming back and reporting the pale, thin bodies that they were seeing when they were going up to see their family members and loved ones. And it's really hard to grasp like the level of commitment and amazing dedication and what it means to physically partake in a hunger strike. Another thing that's really challenging about doing a hunger strike in prison is that there's a lot of miscommunication. There was moments that the CDCR told certain prisons that the hunger strike was over and then everyone started eating and then it wasn't over. And so there was a lot of miscommunication and it's really hard to know what's going on. And imagine being in your cell all alone and not knowing if other people are striking and you're not eating and you're just getting sicker and sicker.
The following letter was sent by a hunger striker at California Correctional Institution, Tehachapi, one of three state prisons containing an all-solitary security housing unit, or SHU. The letter was written by a SHU inmate to his girlfriend, who forwarded it to the Solitary Watch for publication. It is dated July 21st, after the writer had been refusing food for 3 weeks. The letter was written hours before a reporter was allowed to enter the SHU and show print news stories to the strikers regarding the end of the hunger strike. Inmates at CCI Tehachapi have since begun to eat again.
I am glad the word is out. I'm just saddened that I don't see anything on the news of our struggle. As far as we last heard, it's been like 12 prisons that are involved. Here, there are a lot of people on strike, all races, Pelican Bay and Corcoran for sure. As far as commissary, that's a negative. It is CDC policy to search our cells and remove all store when hunger strikes begin, and they did so here. All they do is weigh us and take our vitals, blood pressure, temperature, and heart rate. But of course they weigh us in chains to weigh us down, and they allow the COs to operate the scale. I am at 171 on my last weigh-in, down from 185. They attempt to take my blood, which I refuse. I'm weak as it is. If I do that, I'll fall out. They truly don't care, and they're perfectly content in watching us pass rather than admit fault and make changes to a policy that is brutal and baseless. I can't take my medication anymore because I have to take it with food. I asked for help, and they just ignored me. They also took my shoes when I got here, and my feet hurt. Help get the truth out there. I pray some attorneys get involved. Let them know the CDC is without truth and will lie to keep this issue from ever getting coverage. I'm here, validated for no actual action. This policy of validating people for no reason robs us of our lives. So we're on a hunger strike in which we could pass because in this environment, we've already passed. This is not a life. I have no food and no meds that I can take. All they do is weigh me. They don't treat us. Example, Ensure, Gatorade, nutrients of some sort, nothing. So I remain strong in the hopes that change will come. I get sad when I watch the news and they talk about stuff with no meaning and ignore us. I'm an American citizen, and when enemy combatants in Guantanamo Bay had a strike, they covered it. All networks, beginning to end. But we're just forgotten. Contact all media networks and let them know this is a peaceful protest and we've been given no other option for relief rather than to hunger strike in the hopes that someone, anyone, will care enough to step in and help us. One might think that us as prisoners must be held under duress and extreme conditions in order to refuse the most basic necessity, food. I choose to remain on strike, for I have been robbed of my life, my ability to be a father to my son, a son to my parents, a lover to my love, a friend to friends, and to experience life in the minimum of its meaning. I was sentenced to life in prison at 18 for an action I committed, but now I am validated for no actual action committed by me, and I'll be held here in the SHU until I die or debrief. Just imagine if anyone out there could be put in jail just for someone's accusation. It's unheard of. But in here, it's common practice, for we are forgotten. We are the tragic aftermath of an angry committee. Some believe we don't deserve common decency or compassion because we didn't show any when we committed our crime. To those people, I say, in life, wrongs are committed. I don't justify anything. But this country was founded on mass genocide, and yet that is forgotten. Now that civil rights have passed the oppression that must be, has moved behind these walls of the new concrete slave ship. I am only a man who prays that I will be judged by my actions and my disciplinary file, not by the words of faceless informants and a confidential file that I can't see. We must defend ourselves against the unknown. It's literally impossible. My feet still walk the trail of tears. I am, in my soul, still a believer in justice and the good in people. I believe if society really knew what happened in here, they'd be appalled.
Thanks to Craig Strand for reading the letter from a hunger striker in the security housing unit at Tehachapi State Prison in California. This is Circle A Radio on KBOO Portland. Tonight, we're talking about the historic California prison hunger strike. We now return to our interview with Betty. Her husband is currently in the security housing unit inside Pelican Bay State Penitentiary in California.
Hi, my name is Betty, and I am a shoe wife, and I have been involved in this hunger strike and the actions afterwards from the moment I heard about it. Everyone in there is really pale and thin, and that was before the hunger strike, and they're pale and even thinner after the hunger strike. Other than that, it's really not a whole lot different, but I have here some stuff I received in the mail yesterday about what was actually promised to them, and so, you know, the fact that they were just given caps as opposed to a whole lot of other things is really kind of discouraging that the media wants to portray it in the fashion that it does. I mean, yeah, they got their caps now. That was the first thing. But there's a whole list of things they were promised. And I think that they're doing better in spirit because they're hopeful that maybe we out here can support these changes to actually happen. Because I am under the impression that the staff at the prison really doesn't care what the law is going to tell them needs to be done. You know, overhearing conversations, I have got the idea that everything they want you to believe is everything they believe. And when I say they, I mean guards and staff. And they're going to stick to that story. So I'm concerned that some enforcement isn't going to be put in place. The hunger strike is over, but this only means that no one has to die at this point. The fight has only begun. It has just started, and the people on the outside really need to uphold what happens. I mean, if we're going to make a difference, we have to make a difference. There are some seriously cavalier attitudes of the officials and the employees. I understand a fellow named Darby Kernan, who's Assistant Secretary of Legislation in the CDCR, was the front runner of interaction with prisoners as far as CDC versus prisoners on this issue. He has given them a promise of things like dip bars, pull-up bars, photos on good behavior, phone calls on good behavior, an extra 30-pound package on good behavior. Now, what disturbs me is that language of good behavior is contingent on what they feel is good behavior instead of a protocol to what is good behavior. You know, they need to know what they're earning towards. Yeah, sure, we can figure what is what, but are they going to be acknowledged for what they do? So also, sweats are being allowed in their packages, their beanies, 2 more radio channels on the TV, 2-hour visits, which basically it almost already is, and I think they should have tried for 4, and college courses. And also, the more important thing is that there's a step-down program, and this is what needs to be worked on, and it'll be based on behavior and not on groups, and it is what they use in the feds, and there's no reason why they shouldn't be using it. And they say they'll be working with the lawyers, and there's a lot of involvement on the inside and a lot of details that need to be worked out, but it's a process like anything. The thing is the media isn't being shown what's going on here. Signed it on paper, and there's legal and binding for the step-down program, and that's supposed to be implemented by the end of this year. The ending of debriefing.
Debriefing means something so different on the outside than it does on the inside, so.
Well, yeah, it's actually the opposite of what it means on the outside. I mean, what debriefing is these prisoners are expected to basically spend a lot of time admitting to what would be considered information against themselves and against others. Whether it's real, and if it's not good enough, if they don't find it as beefy enough, they push for more and more. And they can hold these guys up for months and months. And you know, I read somewhere that somebody went through this process 10 years later, he's still in this shoe. So what they want you to do is basically rat out your brothers. So what happens is these other fellows end up in the shoe so you can get out, and then you are a target for being a rat. And that's, like, as low as it gets as far as being credible or being trustworthy. You no longer are. And that's all those men have in there is their honor and their word. And if you don't have that, you know, survival is of the fittest in there, and not everyone can get by without getting themselves in some kind of situation that's forcing them to do things they don't want to do just to survive. And that's how people end up getting in trouble inside in the first place. And then there becomes like this vicious cycle of kill or be killed. It's not any different than being on the front battlefields of a war, only they're confined to this small space. And so the system is using that against them and making them come up with crazy wild stories to use against each other, whether they know anything or not, just to get out of that situation where they're trapped by the system that the system has built up. It's like you're a little rat in a cage, and four big rats in the cage say, "We're going to kill you." What do? You do whatever they say, or you're going to die. So that's how people get in trouble in the first place. What do they want? They want to be out of that trouble. So they turn it into a big snitch fest. Whether somebody does anything or not, whether it's really happening, whether there's people being harmed, you know, it's like they don't tell you what led up to whatever incident that might have led up. I mean, somebody could have been getting harassed for years and turns around and stabs a guy because he's tired of getting buggered or tired of being victimized. So then suddenly he's the enemy. And then they use that enemy against the other enemy. You know, if they would do stuff like create learning structures, societal structures, situations where there was rehabilitation going on and a lot less kill or be killed mentality, they would probably not have these issues at all.
So I just want to clarify, though, you said that one of the concessions from this historic hunger strike was that they are going to end that debriefing process?
Yes.
That's huge.
Yes, it's beyond huge. What it is a promise that the law is forcing on them, that it sounds to me like there might have to be some suing going on for them to uphold it. And here's the thing. If they don't do it, there's going to be another hunger strike, and guys will be dying. They will be dying. They've committed to that. So even though it looks like the hunger strike's over to the mainstream public, it's not. There's absolutely nothing holding these guys back from demanding these changes.
I wanted to back up for a second because one of the things you were just speaking with us about was the structures that they create in the prisons that make it a really inhumane environment for people and cause people
Absolutely.
To kill or be killed. But could you talk a little bit about the division across race lines and how some prisoners have been able to overcome that?
Well, here's the thing. It's like in the shoes, there's no race war. There's individuals locked away from everything, you know, and there's people who are being accused of being gang affiliated, and there's nothing holding them. There's no criminal activity on them holding them in this shoe situation which is an indeterminate sentencing, which is basically illegal, and yet the prison system seems to find that it's okay just to continue on with this practice of throwing people's lives away. In California, they love the race war. The guards love it. They use it to their advantage. They can shut down entire sectors of society by race. And this is one of the major issues that prisoners don't want to be victim of, is that everyone gets punished for the acts of one. That was basically their first demand, that an individual be based on the acts of an individual and not the entire sector, race, gang, whatever, be punished for the acts of one, because it's like they're not even allowed to police themselves. How can they prevent that from happening? You know, they have no grounds to be punishing people like that. There's a structure of racism that isn't even like real racism, in the sense that it's like nationalism. It's like you put all these different types of people together in a small place and they're going to want to stay united or divided. But in the situation with the shoe, they've got these individuals caged away and being treated all the same crappiness. And these people are saying, we're people. We're not a race. We're not a gang. We're not a war. We're people that are being punished beyond the call of duty of punishment. And so, yes, we're standing together as people to make a difference for everyone. You know, they don't care anymore about what anyone thinks as far as, you know, who's affiliated with who when it comes to being treated like a human being.
Not only, you know, have we heard and been fed information about the race wars inside not just California, but all across the country, and we hear about prisoners organizing across those lines, and I know that's been happening for many years, but also, you know, in this whole situation, just the fact that people in so many different prisons were organizing together, and you had mentioned to me on the phone, like, people don't get how that takes place. So I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about how prisoner support works.
I have been laughing a lot about that, because they're just, the media is so mystified at how these different prisons got light of what the prisoners in Pelican Bay are doing. And, you know, honest, they have people outside me and other people just like me who are willing to be the unheard voice. You know, we're willing to speak out for them and let it be known. Whoever's got ears to hear this action that needs to be taken to get some sort of justice. It's bad enough that the justice system is showing us in spades how horribly broken it is, but then you're going to go throw lives away on top of it. You know, I can't even get into every single individual detail, but I promise you, a lot of those people aren't as guilty as those who would hold them at guilt would like them to be. There's a lot of wrongful convictions. There's a lot of prosecutorial misconduct that throws lives away. And with the West Memphis 3, Casey Anthony, you know, it's like, why? What's wrong with these juries? What's wrong with these judges that they can't look at something honestly and say, there is evidence or there is no evidence, and be real about it and not let prosecution bully juries into agreeing whether or not somebody should or should not be guilty, as opposed to proving true innocence and true guilt. And this makes up a good third to a half of long-term prisoners. Long-term. You get these petty acts and these petty crimes and these short-termers, it's a whole other story. You know, but they're next. They're the ones that could end up in the shoe at any minute. You know, so it becomes an entire prison issue. And so there are people who care about individuals in prison who are willing to network and get that word out and make it happen and let these other prisoners know that we need to stand in solidarity. You know, and it's like, they're paying attention to what's going on the outside, too. And they know that our government is screwing us on the outside. And it's huge. It's not just the prisons. It's power run awry. And the way I personally see it, we're next. Joe Citizen is next for whatever reason. We can't let this model of control become the norm for society. But that's kind of how it's coming. You know, the taxpayers getting raped to take care of these long-term prisoners who aren't getting anything worse because of the society they're forced into. So, you know, major change has to happen. You know, and one of the things that drives me crazy is the race card. It's like, this is not about what color your skin is, and I'm sorry if certain races feel that they're more put down than others, but the truth is, prison hurts and prison is damaging, and people don't prosper unless they can get the threat of it and shape up and don't go there. You know, that actually does work for some people, but for most people, it's a 5-minute mistake that's a lifetime of regret. To leave these people to their own devices to try to get something in a rat cage environment, when really they probably need a lot of help, they really need a lot of direction, need a lot of understanding, they're not getting any of it. So, let's just throw them away. And that's our American prison system today.
That was Betty, wife of a Pelican Bay prisoner. Again, this is prison activist Sam Page.
4 prisoners were pulled out from the Short Corridor Collective, and they met face-to-face with people, the CDCR, in a room. This is amazing because when people are moved in prison, it's like a pod with arms that come out, and they're A, B, C, D, whatever, and Short Corridor, people from different pods can't pass each other. So when you're waiting, when you go to meet somebody and interview with them behind the plexiglass on the phone, they bring someone in, and then when they take them out, they have to get them all the way back to their place before the next person comes. It's like a very elaborate transferring system. So the fact that they met with different people from different racialized groups in the same room is huge. And the CDCR says absolutely they do not comply or negotiate on any level with prisoners, and the fact that they did is really powerful. And the strikers decided that because of the concessions that were made, that they couldn't start enacting the concessions unless they stopped striking. Because of the level of impact it had on the prison, they couldn't focus on the concessions that they were going to meet. I also want to say that the people who did strike are really sick. A lot of them have gone to the hospital. They started to eat again, and they have liver failure, and there's some organ damage, and they're in hospitals, and the hospitals are overrun, and the CDCR does have protocols about hunger strikes, but they're unable to uphold their own medical system because it's so overcrowded and broken, and that's why the federal receiver is coming in and saying you need to let people go. And so we need to be a part of that because they don't have the resources to do what they need to do. And we need to follow through as supporters. So that was a big victory. And it's framed in this way, like, oh, the prisoners negotiated and stopped hunger striking because they got calendars and toques. And that's not at all what's happened. It's actually this amazing monumental moment where, you know, this victory of the CDCR meeting with people inside and kind of a shifting of this power structure and, you know, disseminating kind of information in a way that's never happened before. And like I was saying before about the watch caps, you know, people are really cold and suffer and get sick in prison, and being able to have a hat at their hand changes their day-to-day reality. And being able to have calendars that hang on the wall so they can tell when days pass and count time and have a tangible way to calculate time is really important for people on many levels. So part of the agreement was to have proctored exams and the watch caps, the calendars. And then the two things that the CDCR did not agree to was an extra visiting day and extra TV channels. And a lot of the things that they agreed to were very arbitrary, which is frustrating. And they said that they would give them extra visiting time if no one's waiting. So we don't know what that's going to look like. It is clear that Jerry Brown has been meeting with the CDCR. There's been mixed reports about the concessions inside, from people inside. Many people are really excited and elated about what happened.
What kind of actions can folks do to support the demands that have been promised to the prisoners, the next steps?
I would like to see them get all of these fourth and fifth demand items handed to them within the next 2 months as an act of good faith, just like those beanies. I would like to see a complete action, an actual written out plan that is endorsed and put into action on the step down program that is not debriefing. Although it sounds kind of similar, the difference being, I think, is that they don't give debriefing a chance. It's like you're gonna give up all this information, and then you're gonna do the step down thing. They just need to do the step down thing, where they're just given the opportunity to go back into mainstream society, evaluated on the basis of the individual. They don't have to be kept in a situation that's going to keep them thinking that this is it, or given empty promises. I don't even know which is worse. The empty promise cannot happen. And I would really like to see that all of these promises made to them happen without them having to go on another strike. And so the people on the outside really need to keep pressure on the lawyers and CDC and the governor. Keep letting them know this step-down program needs to be implemented, that debriefing needs to end. Indeterminate SHU can no longer be tolerated at all. At all. In instances, I think maybe the SHU is a great deterrent. Stay out of the SHU. Don't do things that put you in the SHU. But there should never, ever, ever be a situation where you can't get out, which is what this whole hunger strike was about in the first place. They weren't given an opportunity to get out of the SHU.
We understand that there is a public hearing meeting in Sacramento on the 23rd of August. Do you plan on going?
I am very interested in going there, and I do want to participate in it. So I'm going to be studying it a little more and making some plans to get there, because I think that our voices need to be the voices of the prisoners that we care about, and to make the difference and get that out there.
On August 23rd, there's going to be a public hearing at the California State Capitol, not at Pelican Bay, and a few of the prisoners are going to telecommunicate to the public hearing. Family members are going to testify and read letters from people inside. And there's a few lawyers that are going to testify. It's from 9 to 11:30 or 12. And people are calling for a statewide national rally in support on this time, at this day, in their Capitol buildings. And I think this is a huge opportunity for organizing and mobilizing to draw attention and to push the CDCR to meet the demands that they agreed to.
People aren't able to hear directly from the prisoners, and I directly to a prisoner on a regular basis, and he's very much a part of this, and is, you know, I think actually my interest in it got him more driven into it. That, you know, any opportunity to not have to live this lifestyle anymore, you know, and who knows? Who knows what can come of this? But if we just sit back and wait for something to happen, it's not going to happen. You know, in 2002, they went on a hunger strike on the same thing, and they had no outside support. They had no attorneys, and pretty much the same thing happened, where they were promised a bunch of stuff and were given a few trinkets, and then it kind of just fell by the wayside. So it's really good that we have attorneys and individuals on the outside screaming and yelling, no more, no more. That's what needs to happen. If you want to get current on what's really going on, I suggest a publication, California Prison Focus, and it gives you a good insight of what's going on with them on a lot of levels. You know, if there's people that don't have a loved one in the prison system, they can adopt a lonely inmate. There's a lot of need for people to stay in communication. And I'm saying, you know, I don't want to say any organizations in that, or even endorse all prisoners, because they come in all shapes and sizes and attitudes and personalities. But the best way to get to know somebody is to spend time with them, and the best way to spend time with them safely is through correspondence. So if you're really, really curious about what's going on, there's a lot of misdirected and sincere people that just need to be able to be heard. Till you walk a mile in a man's shoes, you can never know what he really experiences. Not enough people really take the time to walk in their shoes. And the thing that gets me the most is people who have this cavalier, kill 'em all attitude that just astounds somebody who has even an ounce of compassion, because you're a free person and you think you can go around being judge, jury, and executioner to someone you don't even know, that it's okay to keep people in this situation. It's only harming you, the person that feels that way, because that person will come out someday and they won't be any better for it. There's the threat, you know, of being continually sick. Sick people do bad things. Bad people doing sick things is not so much what's in the prison. What's really in the prison is sick people doing bad things. Help, not punishment. I really want to stress that this is far from over, and like I said, they'll strike again if this next phase doesn't come through. As caring people on the outside, there really needs to be a loud noise being made to make sure that these guys get heard, you know, because they have nothing to fall back on, and the difference is this time we're here and we're not going to take no for an answer.
Thanks to our guests, prison activist Sam Page and Betty, wife of a SHU inmate at Pelican Bay and prison hunger strike supporter. For more information, go to prisonerhungerstrikesolidarity.wordpress.com.
Circle A Radio is broadcast each first and third Wednesday from 6 to 7 here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland. Archive shows can be found at kboo.fm/circlearadio. Thanks for listening.